In this house, oops, I'm sorry, did I give you time to turn that on? Oh, good. We'll call the Veterans Committee on, or the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Services. I'll figure out what I'm saying here in a moment. I was so intrigued looking at Representative Boone's note here. All cell phones, Blackberries, Palms, PDAs must be off, not muted, or on vibrate, off. They interfere with the recording system. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Boone. This room, for some reason, seems to be the worst in the Capitol for that kind of interference. But.
And the home of all four of my committees.
So, hear it so you've got it figured out. Okay, good enough. We are going to move our agenda around just a little bit and begin. First of all, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2098. Mr. Moline.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2098 appropriates funds for Oregon Territorial Sea Mapping Project at Oregon State University, funding sources from settlement of new Carissa trespass case, declares emergency effective July 1, 2009. As you have before you, the amendments that were sent out, the dash one, it establishes that $1,289,000 as the maximum limit of payment of expenses to Oregon State University, OSU by the Department of State Lands 2009-2011 budget proposal for the Oregon Territorial Sea Mapping Project. And fiscals are before you, and there is a no revenue impact on the dash one.
No revenue impact.
Right. Fiscal impact, yes.
There is a fiscal, but no revenue.
Yes, I'm confused by
terms.
That statement, because we're asking for $1.2 million, which is a fiscal.
Right.
Okay.
So
this has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Yes, it does.
Is that correct?
That's correct. This has a subsequent to Ways and Means.
I think that probably covers it. So. All righty. Well,
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative.
We have the room quite stacked with experts today. They all have seven or eight initials or letters after their names and should be able to answer any question that might arise.
Thank you.
Regarding this bill.
Well, I know there's a great deal of interest, and I appreciate all of you coming back. I am reviewing my file and looking at the amount of testimony. We certainly have heard from most of the people in the room, and I see heads nodding to that effect. So I don't have anyone specifically signed up to testify today, but I think if any members of the committee have any questions, we obviously have answers.
They don't dare.
Boone said we couldn't ask questions.
Oh, I see. Chair,
yes.
Is this a public... is this the public information, and we're not in a work session at this time?
Not yet, but we are going to be shortly. I'm offering you an opportunity to ask questions that we will get public testimony on.
Right.
Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2098 and open a work session on House Bill 2098. We have before us the dash one amendments that clarify the amount of money that is to be established and where exactly that is going to go within the structure. And so are there any questions on the dash one amendments?
Dictator Boone, is it okay?
It's okay, Dictator. Yes, sir.
All right, let's get serious here. Representative Whitney?
Just these are funds. We're not asking for any additional fees or anything like that on anything, just out of the regular emergency services budget, correct?
That is correct. The funds that are proposed for this, maybe for some clarification, are monies out of the new Carissa settlement fund,
right,
that remain after the wreckage has now been removed from the beach, and there's a small amount of money left from that decision, and this bill proposes that this amount of that money, 1.289, will be dedicated for this purpose.
Would you like a motion, Madam Chair?
I would, please.
Madam Chair, I move that the Dash 1 amendment be adopted to House Bill 2098, the amendment stated 21809.
Representative Riley moves the Dash 1 amendments be adopted. Is there any further discussion? Representative Comp.
Just a process question, Chair, and we may need to get some help on this, and I apologize if I should ask sooner. This money's going to go to Oregon State. Was there other universities that would be eligible to access this funds, or how did we come to give the money or assign the monies to Oregon State versus another university in our wonderful land?
They're the ones who are doing the mapping.
But I don't know if any other university has that capacity.
Representative Kump, the answer to that, I spoke to Professor Goldfinger earlier, is that Oregon State is the only one that has the seafloor mapping laboratory
right.
in the state.
Thank you. Takes care of that.
Thank you. Seeing that, we have a motion before us to adopt the Dash 1 amendments. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the Dash 1 are adopted.
Madam Chair. I move House Bill 2098 to the floor to pass recommendation with a subsequent Ways and Means.
We have a motion for House Bill 2098 as amended with the Dash 1s be moved forward with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Would staff refresh my memory? This money, this excess left over from this particular fiasco we had on the Oregon coast, where would the money go if we didn't spend it this way?
Madam Chair, Representative Esquivel, if I'm not mistaken, that money just sits there, and DSL could probably enter that. Lewis is here, I believe, and she might entertain us just for a sec here.
Unfortunately,
we're procedurally all...
That's not quite true. We can call up a witness to it during
bring the question. During
thank work
you.
Session.
My parliamentarian is helping me out here.
I believe everything Chuck tells me.
Thank you very much.
If that's not true, Wayne will be here very soon.
We will need some order here.
Madam Chair, Representative Esquivel, Louise Soliday, Director of the Department of State Lands. The remaining money from the new Carissa settlement funds sit in the Common School Fund. They can be used for one of three broad purposes: to fund education, to pay for the expenses of the department, and to pay for management of our lands. And the seafloor mapping project is a project that will take place on the territorial sea, which are part of the lands that we manage in the state of Oregon.
Follow-up?
Well, not a follow-up, but I mean, I'm through asking questions. I need to make a statement on that.
Thank you for the information.
Thank you very much.
We're still in discussion on the motion to move this bill.
Madam Chair.
Representative Booth?
A comment to make also. This money is in the governor's budget. This expenditure is in the governor's budget, along with a couple other things to use this money for. Most importantly, though, the mapping piece puts us in line as a very good faith effort in the federal government's eyes. NOAA, NOAA, National Oceanographic and Aeronautics Association or Administration, we're in line to move up to either first or second place to receive an additional $4.1 million to enhance this mapping project. And this is a nexus of the funding to spend on the seafloor. Coastal Caucus, 9 members signed a letter in support of this unanimously, of this action. This is the third try to get this mapping project moving faster than grant by grant along our coast, in order to provide various, I know you know, we could talk all day about what it can do, but this is important for our tsunami modeling, for our earthquake and hazards, habitat, et cetera, et cetera. And if you need any more information, I can take you out back later and tell you the rest of the story.
You got it?
I got you. Representative Esquivel, did you have further comment?
Somehow, Madam Chair, I feel like I have a thumb screw on my thumb here. She has a screwdriver. I struggle with this at this point, and I'll tell you why. Because we're taking out of the common school fund. Right now, when we're asking schools to maybe not even have some school days. So I'm going to have to struggle with this one. I'll send it on behalf as a courtesy to Ways and Means, which I think it will run into a buzzsaw down there, but I struggle with this taking out of the school fund.
Thank you.
To be honest with you.
Representative Widener?
I would like to echo Representative Esquivel's comments. I don't think this is the appropriate time to be sending this message when we're cutting days out of education, knowing that this is coming out of the common school fund myself. So.
Thank you. Which I guess my comments are simply that that is the methodology we have for processing some funding that the Coastal Caucus feels very strongly needs to be committed to nearshore and ocean purposes because that's where the damage was done. Are there any further comments?
Chair, my colleague on my right,
he always is,
has challenged me to say, well, why would we do this? And the reality is when this bill and other bills like this that get down to Ways and Means, we will need to have a balanced, equitable budget. And as Representative Boone has shared, this is something that's been in the works and attempting to move forward. And this is for the, we're stewards of our land and our children. And so I think we have to look at these things in that balanced proposal. And I think something like this has a very good chance of making it through Ways and Means.
Thank you. Are there any additional comments? Debbie, could you call the roll?
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Conk?
Aye.
Brady?
Aye.
Widener?
No.
Freeman?
Aye.
Matthews?
Aye.
Chair Callan?
Aye. Thank you. House Bill 2098 as amended passes and will be referred to Ways and Means. And I am suspecting if we are successful in bringing this to the floor that Representative Boone would like to be involved in carrying it.
I would love to, yes. Thank you.
So we'll make that note as we move it forward. Thank you. I'd now like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2178.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2178 establishes Campus Veterans Service Officer Program within the Department of Veterans Affairs and places veteran service officers on Oregon University campuses to conduct educational outreach to veterans. It does. We do have a dash one to this, which would declare it an emergency effective on passage. It did modify a little bit the bill. It replaces specifics on the number of campus veteran service officers to sufficient numbers at each university college to provide veteran services. And then it directs university colleges to provide office space for related veterans services. There is no revenue impact on 2178-1, but there is before you the fiscal on this, indicating the costs associated with this, and then the fiscal's trajectory on this, that this could have an impact after the 2009-2011 biennium. And it is in the governor's budget that does include some funds from this, from the general fund, to fund these five positions that they're asking for.
Thank you. Mr. Willis, would you like to update us on the progress here? Paul, did you want to testify together, or do you want, you're going to pass? Okay. General Caldwell? Oh, there he is. How could I not? You're in my line of sight. How could I miss that? Did you wish to testify also? Okay. It looks like you're carrying it.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Willis, and I am Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm here today in support of House Bill 2178 and the Dash 1 Amendment. You will recall we testified before a public hearing on February 3rd regarding this bill and the intent to create a campus veteran service officer program for our universities and community colleges. We believe campus veteran service officers will help maximize the use of the new GI Bill, bringing more federal education dollars to our Oregon campuses. We also believe campus veteran service officers will help student veterans realize other federal and state benefits they have earned. During our last hearing, there were two issues that arose that needed to be addressed by an amendment. The first was addressing a concern by the County Veteran Service Officers Association regarding placing a VSO on each community college and university campus. The second was the fiscal associated with placing a VSO on each campus versus the five veteran service officers that are funded in the governor's recommended budget. The Dash 1 Amendment addresses these issues. First, we have changed the language so that House Bill 2178 requires a sufficient number of veteran service officers to provide veteran services to each campus. This will allow us to use these campus veteran service officers as circuit riders who will see veterans at several campuses in their jurisdiction. Second, by changing this requirement to a sufficient number from one on each campus, the fiscal should align with the governor's recommended budget request of five campus veteran service officers to begin the program. As noted during the first public hearing, there has been no opposition to this bill, just a few details in language to clarify. We believe there is broad support for a campus veteran service officer program and look forward to working with Ways and Means Committee to determine if the program can be funded. I want to add a comment that is not in my testimony, Madam Chair, but is historical in its context, and that is to go back to the original GI Bill from World War II. 16 million Americans served in World War II in uniform. Fully half, 8 million of those veterans went to university after the war. And in essence, as a result of the GI Bill, created what is the middle class in this country. I think we have a chance to do a microcosm of that here. And in addition, of course, I want to emphasize the federal dollars that will flow into our university and community college system and contribute to their viability for the future by the use of these officers. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't remember from the last hearing, do we have an estimate of how much in federal funds would flow into the state? Do we have any estimate of that?
We have a understanding from the post 9/11 GI Bill that they will pay tuition at the highest rate of the highest university tuition. And I will have to check my records to be sure, but I believe that that was based on the University of Oregon. Then the question is, how many people would then use this that are post 9/11 eligible? And if we looked at just the Guard and Reserve, I think we could be looking easily at somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,000 to 4,000. And I think the number could even be higher, and perhaps General Caldwell could give you a better number than I can. I know we've activated more people than that.
He's on his way up here.
Oh, he is. Good. I knew if I waited long enough, he'd join me here. Thank you, Mike.
General, welcome.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, the Deputy Director of the Military Department, Representative Riley, to your question. We have activated over 7,000 individuals since 2001 into federal service. Presently, about 10% of those are in one form or another, have been engaged in post-secondary education at a community college or a university. The highest numbers go to the community colleges, not the universities. So I guess if you do the math, you know, we'd probably be looking at somewhere around 700 students up to this point, and that 10 to 12% seems to be holding pretty steadily. We don't know what the impact will be with the new GI Bill. We do know that for most Guardsmen and reservists, they will probably continue to stay on what's known as the Montgomery GI Bill. It's more beneficial to them. I might also add that we estimate that there's probably somewhere around 3,000 to 3,500 individuals who are enlisted in the military out of Oregon annually. And that might be a little high, but that's an estimate. And that's typically for a three-year hitch. So you have that number coming back, which will then take the new GI Bill, because they will have served 3 years of total active duty, which will be more beneficial to them at that point. So there's, it's kind of a guessing game, but there, I think it's fair to say that you could probably have anywhere between 1,000 and 1,500 students annually that would be maximum looking at this.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up.
So has somebody done the math here and can tell me what that is in dollars?
Chair Cowan, Representative Riley, we can get that for you very quickly. I don't have it right in front of me, but I can get it for you.
Do you know what the University of Oregon, do you know what their rate is? And
Madam Chairman, Representative Riley, I think that we're using a number of roughly around $4,000. I thought it was $3,800, $3,900, around $4,000
yeah.
okay. for tuition. So,
It's about $4,300, and they are increasing it as we speak. But
right,
okay.
But then with the new GI Bill, you get benefits as well. I mean, you pick up stipends and some other revenues. So, I don't know which each one of these veteran students would equate, but I would think it would be close to $5,000 to $6,000 per student in that neighborhood. So it's a fairly
per term.
It's term
per
well,
year.
Well, tuition.
I would say closer to 5 or 6 per year because you
one
got
school year. I'm seeing. Without, yeah, okay. I'm sorry about the interruption. I'm seeing head nodding when we get to the $5,000 to $6,000 per student per year.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that'd be a fairly good bet right in that neighborhood. So it's a fairly significant amount of money.
So we're talking about $10 million.
Probably somewhere in that neighborhood.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Generating a revenue stream
from the federal government.
Right.
From the federal government. And for clarification, because I didn't have it in front of me, I believe the fiscal impact is estimated at around $415,679, to be precise.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Over 09-11 and
11-13? Is that biennial?
No, that's the phase-in cost for 09-11.
Okay.
The roll-up would be more than that for 11-13.
The other comment I would just make is the one thing that we do know, that a lot of, for example, the unit that we're presently deploying, 41st Brigade, roughly just shy of 50% of these people are unemployed. And we have seen this increase in students who have indicated they're going to be students. They've left, about 10% are students now. They're leaving their college to go on this deployment. And we've asked the question, how many of you plan to go back to school? And it's a very high number, more than we've ever had. So we're thinking the economy is certainly having an impact on what they think their future is going to be. So I think we're going to see that number rise.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That all answers my question. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I may offer, just to kind of close the loop on this, we did talk about the number of deployment of Guard personnel. We have returning to Oregon every month from active duty between 300 and 500 people. That's every month. Now, these are the people that would primarily be eligible for the post 9/11 GI Bill. That's one point I wanted to make. The second point is that, and I think it was in my testimony, but I just want to make sure I emphasize this, many of these veterans that we've found on university campuses, in addition to their educational benefit, are also eligible for compensation for disability claims. And the only way they'll know that is by talking to an accredited veteran service officer. Those claims result in compensation coming back into the state budget, and I think I've already shown you, or we've talked before about that, for every one general fund dollar we spend on veteran services, we generate right now $182 back. It's a pretty good investment. And then finally, Madam Chair, thank you for allowing me to talk a little bit longer. The reason for the emergency clause on this bill is because the GI Bill will go into effect in August of this year. If we get this taken care of on passage, it will give us time to train up the people, get them assigned to the university and community college campuses that they're going to be covering, and get the program launched in time for the enrollment of the veteran student when they get ready to go to college. And that concludes my remarks, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Representative Comp.
And thank you, Chair Cowan. And the question I have, and it's not necessarily linked to this bill, but it's part of once we start having those service people enter our universities and such, do you know if in the federal stimulus package dollars we have, there's a nice chunk of dollars coming to each state about higher education. Do you know if our service people are eligible for those or they follow a different track?
Madam Chair, Representative Comp, to my knowledge, they're not eligible, but maybe somebody else could correct me, but we've seen nothing that indicates that, and service members are going to stay in the programs that are currently available as opposed to jumping back out.
Okay. Mr. Evans, did you want to comment here?
Yes, sorry, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Paul Evans, Policy Advisor, Governor Kulongoski for Veterans and Military Issues. On the stimulus package, there were lots of things in the original version, mm-hmm. some of which were for veterans. We think the only piece directly for veterans coming out of that was about two billion for construction for mostly VHA facilities across the country. Okay. There was nothing specifically right. that we're aware of in the higher ed piece. Okay. The other thing, if I could, just the indulgence of the committee real quickly, there's the education piece is important in this, but one of the major focuses of the Campus Veteran Service Officer Program is a piece of a larger, much more full-spectrum approach of outreach generally. Just, again, the facts and figures on this are a little bit helpful and instructive. 351,000 veterans in the state of Oregon, encompassing all ages, all backgrounds. 270,000 of those veterans, we think, are here but are not currently enrolled in any kind of assistance or support or help. Because the 80,000 that are there, that are enrolled and involved, have already taken that step. 270,000 have not. We're trying everything we can, as you're aware of, through executive orders and other things, looking at DMV and other agencies to try to reach out. The critical nature of this that starts getting me animated is the fact that with Iraq beginning, at least according to President Obama, to come to some kind of closure there, there's going to be a structural change, and at least among the veterans that have been in that theater, once the war's over, there's a little bit of a different feel than when the war's going on. And we're concerned especially about access to mental health and other concerns, and we believe that the campus VSO is one more tool in our toolbox to reach out and make sure that those folks get the full wraparound care that they have earned. So in addition to helping to make sure that we maximize the full education benefit, it's also making sure that those veterans get the access to the other benefits they've earned.
Are there other questions?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Were you going to touch on this as the chair, or can I ask a question specifically about this?
Well, this gentleman will be testifying in a moment, but
that's
we
fine.
May.
Yeah, I guess. So I'll just give you, we're going to hear testimony here. There is some opposition to the bill, but it's just somebody that wants to testify in opposition. I'll let him speak his terms, but I want to just give you a chance to address. When somebody says these services are already being performed on college campuses now for our veterans, how do you respond to that, in that this bill just duplicates service that already exists?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Matthews, that's simply not the case. We met with the County Veteran Service folks. I've met with the financial aid people at the various campuses. And when, as Mr. Evans just described, we talk about providing full-spectrum veteran services, that's exactly what we're talking about. And that is not occurring on any campus in the state today.
Follow-up, Madam Chair? Thank you. And that is That is my position on this. I think that we're reaching out to our veterans, having the VSOs, I think is critical. Also, when you look at a number of other bills, these all kind of fit hand in hand with how we're going to reach our folks with their service connected disabilities and whatnot,
yes,
and getting them in touch and having these programs in place. So appreciate your testimony and thanks, yes, for answering the question. Thank you,
Representative.
I think just for clarification, not to grill you particularly on the numbers, but I do think, I feel very strongly that, as we have been asked, it is the responsibility of policy committees to review the financial impact, the revenue sources, and to look at those issues before we consider moving a bill forward. So I appreciate, although we, you know, didn't mean to put you on the spot as far as struggling with some numbers, I think that it's important for this committee to take all of those considerations under advisement. This is, I know, one of the highest priority pieces of legislation from the Interim Committee on Veterans Services, and so we're going to consider it very carefully, but it is important to understand that at a difficult time, we're also asking for revenue to implement the program.
Chair Cowan, if I could...
The microphone was moved in front of you, so yes. I'm guessing you have
response. Yes, ma'am. Yes, Chair Cowan, we in the task force want the committee to understand that we know that financial situation is rough, and... two things. One, to answer Representative Matthews' questions also, there's a lot of folks out there that do a lot of good things for veterans, but the key indicator there is certification of a veteran service officer that can act in certain functions with the power of attorney and other function and other things to help the veteran. And I think we can prove, if it does happen on campus, is rare and unusual and tied to another function. There's no mechanical tool right now to do that, which we're hoping for. In terms of the overall issue with the finances, Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's actually the thing that keeps me up at night, because it is precisely because of the economy that we're in right now and precisely because of the experiences that a number of these folks have had two and three times, and looking toward what World War II produced in terms of after the fact, instead of putting everybody into unemployment, the GI Bill actually acted as a cushion to help ease the working environment. So I actually believe even more strongly in the campus veteran service officer program now than I did when the economy was a little bit better, because it will actually take the pressure off some folks to get some retraining, get some skills to get back into the economy, and at the same time not flood the market with people trying to get jobs as we're trying to slowly rebuild our infrastructure. So in this particular case, I think it's actually a federally subsidized cushion, and that's why I think that it does merit at least continued discussion. But again, we don't have to sit there and make the big decisions that you do, and I'm actually thankful for that. But thank you for letting us come forward with these ideas.
Thank you. Could in just one of the things you mentioned, could you just expand a little bit on the certification of veteran service officers, what that enables them to do differently than perhaps other advisors on campus?
Chair Cowan, I'll take a first stab and then let the expert actually answer that. The thing that is important as we look again at the veterans in landscape, first of all, not every state has a state veterans department. Not every state has county veteran service officers. Not every state has service organizations that have VSOs. Oregon has a unique relationship, largely because of the leadership of the department, where people that have done the work and gone through the, I think it's a two-year process, have actually been accredited through Director Willis and subsequently through the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. And they have a certain number of skills and a certain number of duties that they can do for a veteran that other people can't. And that involves yearly training, that involves making sure that there's a level of a standard of work and a standard of product that is maintained, and constant communication and access to the federal database, which the state VSOs have. It is not an easy program, but Oregon, we actually do right now have our cake and eat it too in terms of that level of care. We're trying to expand that and make sure that same standard of services on the campuses. And I'm going to let Jim explain how he does that.
Each Veterans Service Officer in Oregon is accredited by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs. Our department has an intergovernmental agreement with the federal VA that causes us to administer both the training and the testing of people who want to be a professional veteran service officer. And the way that I would like you to look at the work they do is that they practice veterans law. They have the ability under law to file limited powers of attorney. They have the ability and sometimes even the responsibility to review very detailed health records, in some cases very detailed fiscal records or fiduciary records. So these are positions of great public trust, and they require, before we allow the accreditation of these individuals, that they meet a very high standard in order to do this work. And I'm very proud to tell you that we have very, very few exceptions to that standard in our state. And when they do occur, which is very rare, they're dealt with very quickly, and the people are dismissed not only from this work, but forever from this work. I can tell you that the veterans that are receiving this service, the widows, the orphans that are entitled to benefits, are working with some of the highest class of men and women anywhere in America, in the United States. And I appreciate the trust that the governor's placed in our department to administer this training and this testing. And I appreciate working with the high level of people who do this work every day. So I hope that explains. And by the way, the training period is about 2 years. From the time you come into the program till the time that you can take your even take your accreditation test is 2 years. Most people can do it in that period of time, and I'd like to say that that's because I've got great trainers that know how to do adult education, which some members of this panel are very familiar with that process. I'm not looking at Representative Comp, but I think she is familiar. But in any event, that's sort of the overview of how we do the training and accreditation in our state.
Mr. Willis, one of the questions that was raised, I think, in the first hearing related to coordination with the county veteran service officers. Could you maybe expand on or respond to that potential conflict that was raised?
Sure. The concern with regard to House Bill 2178, right?
Yes.
Okay. What their concern was that the original language in the bill compelled the department to put a veteran service officer on every university campus and on every community college campus. They believe that if the funds were not there, that the department wouldn't be able to do that, and therefore wanted to have some flexibility in the language, which this Dash 1 amendment gives us, and gives us a chance to begin with five that are covered. Now, they aren't covering just five campuses. They're covering multiple campuses. But it is not, and I don't think any member of this committee believes that it is, but it is not covering every university campus and community college in the state. That would take at least 24 people.
Perhaps so I could clarify question a
sure.
little bit. I understood about just the five. My understanding of the question that was raised also dealt with coordination with the existing county veteran service officer, the individual who resides in that county, what services they might be gaining through the campus interaction and how that mm-hmm. would be related through the system. Now, you did mention a database, so maybe it's all available, but that was how I remember the question being raised.
Yes, Madam Chair, you are correct. That was also part of the question, and you're also correct in that we have a shared database available, and we share case information with one another. If it's better that the case be developed by the county person, then that veteran's case is developed by them. If it's better that it's developed by the state person, then we do it. And then all of the claims by our state and county officers go to one quality control point in Portland. and every single claim receives quality assurance review at that level before it goes to the federal VA for adjudication. So any concerns that the county folks may have had before, I can assure you, Madam Chair, we have worked through them with their leadership, and they are now in support of this bill. We've met with them and had those discussions.
Thank you. Are there any additional questions for these gentlemen? We do have someone else waiting to testify here. I want to respect that. Thank you very much. Robert Thornhill? Hello. Welcome.
Thank you.
Go ahead. If you could identify yourself for the record, and then I will let you know that I believe the committee has copies of your printed testimony before us, so maybe you could summarize a bit.
Okay. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Robert Thornhill. I live at 7191 Southwest 161st Place in Beaverton, Oregon. As a veteran and just as an ordinary taxpaying citizen, I appear in opposition to House Bill 2178. I've submitted detailed written testimony. With your permission, I'll summarize here.
Please summarize so that we can raise any questions that we might have or lack of understanding.
HB 2178 establishes a program of placing veteran services officers on campuses of Oregon University and community colleges. This program flows from the report of the Governor's Task Force on Veteran Services. According to the report, the purpose of the campus VSO is to, quote, assist veterans in realizing the new GI Bill. I want to make it clear that these VSOs do not recruit, do not enroll, nor encourage veterans to go to college. They do not increase enrollment. Each and every campus already has veteran services officers, so to speak, to assist veterans realize the new GI Bill. They are commonly called academic and financial aid counselors. These professional counselors are professional employees, public employees, just as the additional VSOs would be. The task force report presents no evidence indicating that these counselors are not effectively assisting veterans realize the new GI Bill. However, if such evidence exists, the sensible economic thing to do would be to train them to the new GI Bill. It makes no sense whatsoever to add to the public payroll by hiring additional employees to fill this gap in knowledge, if the gap in fact exists. After all, HB 2178 envisions that the new VSOs must also be trained and certified. In addition to the foregoing, to assist veterans with benefit claims, there are over 65 VSOs and VA claims officers scattered throughout this state. Claims assistance is available near every university and college campus. And I have no doubt that if needed, student veterans can get off campus to make use of it. Veterans do not need to be spoon-fed. The task force reports, quote, during multiple town halls, the task force also heard the theme of veterans seeking information, often false, from one another. This was particularly true at college campuses, unquote. The task force visited two identifiable campuses, Portland State University and Clampus Community College. One cannot stop others from listening to guardhouse lawyers, but the situation at those campuses does not support the quoted statement. Both campuses have comprehensive academic and financial aid counseling programs. Moreover, Portland State University is located just a few city blocks from the federal building in downtown Portland. In that building, one may find scores of VSOs and VA claims officers ready, willing, and able to assist. More relevant to the notion of veteran students having to rely on bum dope from fellow veterans Both campuses have active chapters of Student Veterans of America. I've included details about this organization in my written testimony. That organization's website, Resource Library, does not contain bum dope. It is professional and probably contains more helpful information than ODVA's website. The task force refers to landscape of veterans. To continue that metaphor, student veterans are not potted plants. They are internet and computer literate. They use those tools. Information about all VA and other federal benefit programs, such as Small Business Administration, Office of Personnel Management, Department of Labor, are available on the internet. There is no credible evidence that VSOs on campuses feel the real need. There are real needs, however, underfunded. The VA provides the best of health care. I can vouch for it. That's where I get my care. But it is substantially underfunded to care for the horrific injuries our troops are now experiencing. At the Oregon state level, we read every day of underfunded K-12 education system. These students are our future. They are our children, veterans' children, and grandchildren's too. The money for these programs come from the same pockets. Those pockets are not bottomless. To fund an unneeded program, such as VSOs on college campuses, denies funds to critical unmet needs. And I request you let HB 2178 die in this committee. And in conclusion, I thank you for listening to me, and I thank you for what you do here. I don't envy you your task, and I'm pretty sure you don't do it for the money. And I would be remiss if I didn't also thank David Molina. I don't do this every day, and without his help, I'm not sure I'd have made it here. But thank you. I'll be try to answer any question you may have.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Thornhill? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mike Sullivan?
Good afternoon, Chair Cowan and committee. For the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I'm the political director for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers, testifying in support of 2178. I am a veteran. I spent 4 years, 7 days, 3 hours, 31 minutes, and 17 seconds in the United States Navy. 22 months of that was on two aircraft carriers on the flight deck. Although no one ever shot at us, it was a bit scary at times. The reason I support this is because of previous testimony, like Paul pointed out about the GI Bill of World War II, for every dollar it was, cost to administrate the GI Bill, it put $6.90 back in and jobs. Construction jobs, better careers for the graduates, and the friendly face. Everyone who's been a veteran is an odd duck when you come out because you've been voluntarily incarcerated, if you will, and now you're out in the mainstream, and it's difficult, and you're looking for someone friendly. Talking to Director Willis the other day when he said he got out of Vietnam, a group of them got together, and, they would try and reach out to people that were coming back themselves. So to put a service officer on the campus is a friendly face, someone you'll go to. You're not going to go to an administrator. You probably won't go across the street. You're more worried about trying to become normal. It takes time. My own situation, I have a disability, and I went with a friend of the county service officer we had in Yamhill County, Diane Sienti, who is dead now, and a terrific woman. When I explained what was going on, she told me that can't happen. And when she got done, my disability went up. She was like a big sister for me, a terrific person, a friend, and a woman who knew what she was doing. My own son-in-law is a bright fellow. He married my daughter. But he didn't even know he had the GI Bill for housing. He had spent 4 years in the United States Air Force, and I was astonished. And so that's why I'm appealing to you and the idea that, yes, time is very rough right now, But these veterans, you know, volunteered their time, sometimes their lives, and some are maimed. And so I think whatever it costs, their investment in this country should pay dividends now. And I'll answer any questions. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Sullivan? Okay, thank you very much. Is there anyone else that was here to testify on this particular bill? Okay. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2178. And unless I see any objection from the committee, I think we'll move to work session on this bill. Okay. Representative Widener?
Madam Chair, I wouldn't mind having a little time to just go check out some of these websites and kind of get a first-hand look to see how hard it is to find the veteran services. So, because we've got testimony from two different sides, but if it's at all possible, I mean, we can move it today if you want, but he gave us a couple of websites here in his testimony, and it would be worthwhile, I think, to check them out.
Okay. I will grant that request, and we will bring this back for a work session in the very near future. So do it quickly.
I will be ready by
Mr. Molina, if we could get
Thursday.
That scheduled soon as possible. Okay.
Someone's raised, trying to get our attention.
I'm sorry, I looked in
way
the
way down here.
Sorry about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Esquivel.
I guess the question, and I'm struggling with this as I've conveyed to Jim, because we have one of our campuses about two blocks away from the county itself that has the Veterans Service Officer involved. Every county seems to have one of these or more of these service officers. Why don't we just require that they send one to a campus once or twice a week?
Representative, we're not in public hearing at this point.
I'm to you.
So
I'm talking to you.
I would ask that you take that question to the department offline before we bring this back. Okay? Thank you. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Madam Chair, since if you will oblige.
I don't know. I've got this thing in my hand.
I know, and I'm within swinging reach. It's going to need to be bigger than that. No, I mean to hit me over the head. I guess my point, and I appreciate my colleagues' thoughts on this, but, you know, I mean, I guess my point is that, sure, we can delay it, and we can look at a couple more websites, and I appreciate Mr. Thornhill taking time to testify. Thank you very much. We'll agree to disagree on this. I see an absolute need for the veteran service officers. I see the fact that several things link on this, and when you look at the investment, this is truly an investment that we're asking, you know, Ways and Means and all of our colleagues to make, and towards towards actually going after some of the federal dollars that are available for
Representative Matthews. We're not debating the bill.
I understand. I find it very unfortunate we're not working the bill today, Madam Chair. That's my
Thank
comment.
You. Thank I you. Appreciate that. We will work it soon.
Absolutely.
Okay. I'd like now to open a public hearing on House Bill 2094. 2494, excuse me. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2494 would exempt property tax to mobilize active duty military residents deployed under Title 10 orders for more than 178 days. It would exclude service members in school, training, exercise, operational missions, conducting inactive duty training or battle assembly, or hospitalized at the service member's permanent duty station or living in the vicinity or living at a place of residence and or facing disciplinary actions. It applies to property tax years effective July 1, 2010. And we do not have fiscals and revenues on this due to it not being a work session. They held back on that.
Thank you. General Caldwell, could you help us understand what I just heard? Please. Was Representative Maurer desirous of testifying on this bill? It is his bill.
He interceded, but
he was not able to attend today. Okay, thank you. Sorry, just trying to figure out where we are here, who I should be calling. Yes, sir, please.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director at the Oregon Military Department. The legislature took this on about, I think it was 2005, and passed legislation that gave Guard and Reservists this $60,000 tax exemption on homestead property. The bill was difficult to implement because of some of the language that ended up in it, and so in 2007 it was reworked again, and then it was smoothed out, so actually you could actually get the benefit, because the first one just got into all kinds of tax issues and timing issues. And as I understand this bill, and I have not talked to Representative Maurer, what this bill does is it extends that same benefit, basically, to all service members, not just the Guard and Reserve, which, again, I testified earlier that we estimate that there's approximately 3,500 enlistments annually by the active component and all the service branches. I would submit that most of those are probably not going to be property owners. They're going to be, you know, young men and women who haven't developed the means at this point to actually buy property, so they're probably a very small number of those. What this would allow, since we don't have a lot of active duty in this state, we have basically the Coast Guard, who has stations on the coast and in Portland. You have recruiters who aren't typically Oregon residents. Because of tax laws, they normally are moved in from another state, and they keep their home record in another state. So the impact, and I've been asked by Revenue on this on a couple occasions, I wanted impacts, and I'm not sure. I told them I'm not sure I can come up with an impact for you, because it's kind of tough thing to kind of figure out who this would actually impact. I think it's going to be a very small number of people. I just have no way of determining that, though. So as I see the bill, it says that you need to be deployed under Title 10. As you look in line 8 of the bill, it says serving in the Oregon National Guard, and then added in the Armed Forces of the United States, where the current law says without the Armed Forces of the United States, which that tells me that that's excluding active duty personnel that have property in Oregon, where this will add that back in. So it's, you know, I don't know what the counties know. I've talked, emailed back and forth with the Association of Oregon Counties. I think they've struggled with the same issue as how many people are actually doing this now, how many new people would be added into this benefit. And again, it's very, very hard to determine that. But my hunch is it's going to be a very small number, if you want my honest opinion, because it just simply doesn't. We don't have the military base. If we were Fort Lewis sitting here on this, you know, in the state of Oregon, then I think you'd have a huge impact, because a lot of those soldiers and of course, all the military in Washington, they do buy homes in and around Fort Lewis. But we just don't have that military impact here. The National Guard and the Reserve are the two big dogs in as far as numbers goes, and that's roughly 10,000 people, 12,000 people, somewhere in that neighborhood. So that kind of gives you a smattering of what the potential is. We're not opposed to the bill. We think that, you know, it's a decent benefit. I think some of our soldiers, and I think, again, the Guard and Reserve are going to have a bigger impact on the counties, because we're typically older, more mature, family members have residences where active duty folks don't. Recruiters typically going to be here for 2 to 3 years, and they're going to move on. They may buy property when they're here, but, you know, it's probably 50-50 on that one as well. So that's what I can tell you what our thoughts on the bill.
And to clarify so that I make sure I understand correctly, this benefit is extended currently to the Guard and Reservists.
Yes, ma'am, it is.
Thank you. I just want to make sure I'm understanding that correctly. Does anyone have any questions for General Caldwell? Thank you. I know that we have representation here available for questions if we have any for them from counties and the Department of Revenue. I'm suspecting that because we have asked for clarity as far as financial impacts of measures that are before us, the reason that they are not actually signed up to testify today is because they also don't have the numbers that that General Caldwell has just indicated that he doesn't have. It's difficult to answer my questions about fiscal impact if we don't have numbers of people that would be impacted. If I could get head nodding that is the reason you don't have a testimony for us today. Thank you very much.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Phillips of the Oregon Department of Revenue. Thank you. I'm not here to talk about the numbers, but the bill itself, as General Caldwell pointed out, was designed for people who are more mature and older, people who are weekend soldiers that are called up to serve under Title 10 in Iraq or Afghanistan. They're going to be away from their jobs, and this bill provided them, or this concept provided them with an opportunity to have their property taxes paid while they were temporarily away. This bill would expand the the types of soldiers that would be eligible to people that are serving, I think, professionally, more full-time. But we're not experts at the Department of Revenue in military matters, so we would rely on the military department and General Caldwell and others to help us understand that. The one concern we have is in implementing the bill. And, you know, the counties, we have 36 counties that implement the property tax in Oregon, and they'll want to know when someone walks in the door and applies whether this person qualifies or not. As General Caldwell said, in 2005 the bill was passed that established this program. It was drafted in such a way that it couldn't be implemented. And so we had 2 years of people applying and being turned down, and in 2007 we fixed it. That's when we got together. And sometimes the administration part of a measure is overlooked. So we want to be here saying, we want to make sure this works for the people for whom you intend it. And when I look at the first page of the bill, where it starts with the definition on line 22 of deployment, our concerns are, and this is what I called Representative Maurer about and have asked several military experts about, what does this mean and how will counties that accept applications know when someone is unavailable solely because of hospitalization or disciplinary action? These are the kind of questions that we're not sure those people who are unfamiliar with this kind of an area will know. Now, if they were discharged, we'd have a DD-214, and it would say. If it's contained in the orders, like the current program, all the information is contained in the orders. We know how long they're deployed. We know what title they're deployed under. That information is available. But with this definition, where it's providing for four different criteria there are exceptions to deployment, they shouldn't be contained in the discharge order because, by definition, this program is about active duty. So these people are actively serving. Their families are getting the benefit because they're not home. So I'm not sure the discharge papers are going to help. And so I've contacted Representative Maurer's office, and we've not been able to connect on how do we get these people the benefits that this bill is designed to get them, and we're just trying to work that out.
Thank you for raising the questions for us that we need to get worked out. Okay.
So if you have any questions.
Any particular questions? I think at this point, a lot of what I'm trying to do is collect the questions so that we can monitor when or if we get some answers to those. Mr. Evans.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm still Paul Evans, Policy Advisor, Governor Kungoski. This is not a task force bill, but I have had conversations with Representative Maurer, and I think I can explain what he was trying to get at, and I think that may provide kind of a starting place. I think his concern was that whatever is on the books currently may not be clear to the deploying members, or may not be working. And again, I don't know. I'm coming to his conversation on his bill, but the reason for some of the language in the bill was basically he wanted to cover the folks that were called up for Title 10 service and make sure that it was for kind of good service, not not unexpected circumstances that keeps a person out of the state for years and years and years and then costs more money and more money and more money, like being incarcerated or being in a hospital for a long period of time or other things like that. He was, I believe, not trying to muddy the waters, but actually make it more clear, more focused for those that are currently on duty under Title 10 for mobilization purpose. So if, in fact, that benefit is there and everybody that is being deployed currently multiple times can take advantage of that, he may already have the meat of what he wants to get accomplished. I just would suggest that conversation that you're trying to have would maybe clarify some of these issues.
My inclination at this point is to strongly recommend that those favoring the bill and those who understand the current system get together and try to iron out some of those issues. If it needs to come back, then let us know and we'll bring it back for further conversation.
Madam Chair, I'll help make sure that we get everybody together and talk about it.
Thank you. Any other specific questions that you want to put to these folks? Okay. Thank you very much. I will just mention to the committee that part of my concern, in addition to equity, is that it's easy for us to move things off because property taxes are not a fiscal impact directly to the state, but they are to other areas of local government. And I want a clear understanding of what those costs will be as we discuss things and we move forward, too. So I will just sort of throw that out there. And with that, I will close the public hearing on 2494. Thank you all. We got Representative Comp to her next meeting.
Thank you.
I'm sorry?
Are you going to adjourn?
I was just checking to see if there was any other committee business, but it looks like I need to quickly. We are adjourned. Thank you.
It's driving, aren't they?